Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. At the start of this month, on Saturday, August 3rd, 22 people were killed by a gunman at a local Walmart store in El Paso, Texas. Then 13 hours later, another mass shooting, this one in Dayton, Ohio, leaving 9 dead. Police say the attacker in Texas drove hours to El Paso from a Dallas suburb. And according to police, the attacker said he was specifically targeting Mexicans. This hour, we want to talk with Latinos here in Iowa about their reactions to these shootings, to the shooting most specifically in El Paso. Later in the program, a historian will put these recent events of violence against Mexican-Americans in historical context. But first of all, let's listen to the El Paso mayor, DeMargo. This is just after the shooting.
Our community will not be defined by this senseless, evil act of violence. We will be defined by the unity and compassion we showed in the wake of this tragedy. United, our community will heal. El Paso is too strong to be broken by a cowardly act like this one.
The El Paso mayor went on to assure the people of El Paso that they are safe. You can join our conversation this hour, especially if you're a member of Iowa's Latino community. What's your reaction to El Paso and the aftermath? Has this changed your thinking? 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Joining us, first of all, two Latino members of our Iowa community here. Father Guillermo Trevino is with me in the Iowa City studio. He is the parochial vicar at St. Joseph's in West Liberty, also at St. Bernadette's in West Branch, and at St. Patrick's in Iowa City, as well as chaplain at Regina Catholic School in Iowa City. Father Trevino, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Emilia Marroquin is with us. She is a member of the Storm Lake Community District School Board and has lived in Storm Lake for nearly 20 years. Emilia, welcome to you. I think we have you now. Emilia, welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, very good. We hear you now. Father Trevino, let me start out with you. For those not familiar with West Liberty, it is a unique Latino community in Iowa. Tell us briefly about your community there.
Yes, West Liberty is one of two towns with Columbus Junction where the minority, the Latino population, is actually the majority, over 50%. In the town, the new superintendent, Dr. Giraldo, he's from Columbia, a Latino. The bank vice president is a Latina. So there's a lot of Latinos in power and a big part of the population.
Mm-hmm. And while you are not a native Iowan, you are a native of this country and originate from Texas, as a matter of fact, I believe.
Yes, I was born in San Antonio and moved to the Quad Cities when I was 3.
Mm-hmm. Give us your reaction to the tragedy in El Paso. First of all, do you have any connections with the victims?
Ironically, the day of the shooting, I was baptizing a kid, and a lot of his family came from El Paso to celebrate the baptism. And so while we were doing the baptism, nobody really knew. But then later on, I'm hearing all the news on Facebook and online, and I'm immediately texting the mom, like, is everything okay? And she tells me what happened, so I let her know. And so she immediately calls her family over there, texts me later that none of her family members were hurt, but it's still a tragedy and that it really hurt them. And, you know, because they're one community in El Paso, they seem to be, you know, very loving and respectful. And so it's sad what happened.
Mm-hmm. With your connections to not only West Liberty, but West Branch and Iowa City, especially the Latino communities, what have you witnessed over the past 2 weeks regarding this event, the trauma, perhaps the anger or the fear that it has set off here?
All of the above, but I would also add the compassion. You know, there's been a lot of support towards El Pasoite was reading about how at a funeral a bunch of people showed up in El Paso because they had nobody to go. So I think a lot of that as well has been, you know, in the tragedy, especially the Latino population. There's been a lot of fear with everything else going on in the news. And so this is just, it seems like an icing on the cake. Like, you know, I was sharing with a friend that I'm scared to go to Walmart because, you know, just, you never would expect that, but it just seems something that you never expected to happen. And mm-hmm. one has to be a little more careful.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean, be a little more careful?
Just one, keep their eyes open. Unfortunately, you know, you just have to look around, second guess yourself, because for one's safety, mm-hmm. it just seems that's... Mm-hmm.
Let's go to Amelia Marroquin in Storm Lake. You've been a member of that community for nearly 20 years, and you're a member of the Storm Lake Community District School Board. For those who don't know, let me start off the same way. Storm Lake is a significant Latino community as well.
Yes, it is.
Tell us, how has the community been reacting?
Well, I think in general, and not only Storm Lake, but in general, our community has been reacting with, you know, a lot of concerns, because really this problem of mass shooting in general is affecting everybody. And also, you know, thinking that it's violence against Latinos, it make it more difficult to think about how we need to react if something happened to us. And the community is just trying to be informed, trying to be careful, basically, something that is, you know, not really what we are supposed to be doing in the land of freedom, because we are supposed to be in a safe country where anything like this should be happening.
Mm-hmm. You say to be more cautious. Amelia, are there specific actions that you've witnessed in the community, or are you doing things differently now because of this shooting in El Paso?
Maybe people doesn't say it aloud, like, oh, I'm doing this and that, but I'm sure they are thinking about it. Personally, yes, I do. It's, you know, like things like, it was hard for me to just see with my own kids last week, and, you know, they are going to college, and letting them know, oh, you know what, be careful with this, don't do this, or if you hear a gun shooting, go to the floor. You know, it's sad to talk about it with your kids, but it's something that now is part of the conversation.
Mm-hmm. So these are actually kids, young people, the youth of Storm Lake going out to other
yes.
parts of the state, and you're having discussions with them about what to do if there is a shooting.
Yes, actually happened to me that last week I took a group of kids to perform a cultural dances to the Iowa State Fair, and that was a conversation that we had to have. And they were like 7 to 17 year olds. And honestly, to me, it's like, it was so sad to be talking about this and not talking about having fun and enjoying the trip. No, you have to be worried about what is going around you. Be careful about what you hear and what you see.
Mm-hmm. Specifically, because
yes.
the shooter here told police in El Paso that he was specifically targeting Mexicans. Well, what does that do to the Latino community there in Storm Lake in terms of having this ethnic group specifically targeted? What discussions does that spark?
Well, the discussion is about just taking care and having trainings about being like a school staff, or having trainings about if an intruder gets to school, what to do, how to react. And, you know, teachers should be teaching skills, not being worried about having a children in the school system, but we have to talk about it now like something that is very normal, which, you know, it's sad to say it, but it's the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think affects everybody, and hopefully this doesn't happen anymore, like in a big mass, but it's hard to think that it's not going to happen too.
Mm-hmm. Join our conversation this hour as we talk with members of the Latino community here in Iowa reacting to that awful tragedy little over 2 weeks ago in El Paso. Of course, there was a mass shooting in Dayton, but specifically focusing on El Paso for this discussion, as the shooter did say that he was targeting Latinos. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Let's go to our first caller, Karina Hernandez. If I got your name right, from Marshalltown. Karina, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Yes, you did get my name right.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Welcome to the program. What's on your mind as you listen to this discussion?
Yeah, well, it is very concerning that we have shootings going on, and it is very, I think it puts a little bit of responsibility into even our president now, the fact that he's demeaning to our Mexican immigrants. I feel like it really puts a little bit of a responsibility, as it's leading to violence now and more or less a hate crime towards immigrants against minorities. So I really do think it's unfortunate for our country, mm-hmm. where we are supposed to be living freely. Now we can't even shop in our own shopping markets or malls in our community due to such young people thinking the way they think and doing those things to our people, to our community. And it's not towards people that are unfortunately doing anything wrong. They are just really living their normal life, going to a shopping, mm-hmm. to a shopping mall.
Karina, I neglected to mention when I mentioned your name, I see on my screen you called, and you are a school board member in Marshalltown?
Yeah, I am the Marshalltown School District school member here.
Mm-hmm. How has this specifically, that you can see, impacted the youth of Marshalltown, or how has the school board reacted to this, or have they done anything differently?
Well, we're a little bit fortunate here where we've, because we've had a raid back in, I want to say, I think it was 2007.
An immigration raid.
Right. We had an immigration raid here back in 2007, I think it was, where we provided the community with information, especially our minority, our immigrant community, about what to do and have a plan at home. So this is just kind of adds to it as far as being safe in the public, and just being safe and having a plan when people are out and about. Personally, I have not seen a lot of people talk about being scared or being more aware, but I know people are talking about the unfortunate of our country and how it's more and more being heard of these mass shootings. And a lot of it has to do with our gun laws and the hate crimes, the way our government, our people are talking about immigrants and how it's leading to the violence. So that puts a little bit of responsibility. But here in Marshalltown, thankfully, our community is very united, and we hope nothing like that would ever to happen. But personally, for sure, it's something to be more aware of. We just had our Iowa State Fair, so that's something that I know I took my son and my family. So mm-hmm. we did have that conversation walking in, you know, mm-hmm. if something were to happen, what do you do? Mm-hmm. Where do you run? Where do you hide? I also have a daughter in college where I do have a concern that she goes to University of Iowa, where a lot of it is minorities. It is a high community with minorities, and it's very diverse, just as Marshalltown. Okay. So it is a concern.
Okay. Karina Hernandez, thank you very much, for Marshalltown school board member, there, for joining us with your thoughts.
Thank you.
Let's go to Des Moines. Another caller, Marlu, is with us. Marlu, I hope I got your name right. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you so much. Yes, you got my name right.
Okay, you're listening to this conversation. Welcome. What do you want to pitch in?
I want to pitch in the idea that we should be having two different types of conversations. One definitely around guns and who should have which guns, But also the conversation about having a cultural shift. We know from this past shooting that it was hate motivated and it was bias motivated for sure. And I firmly believe that if we had folks in leadership who were people who could bring folks together in the community, people who could serve as ambassadors, we could nip this type of hate in the bud. I do think it's been occurring since the last presidential election, where it's a negative narrative that's been surrounding folks of Mexican heritage. It's really unfortunate, and it's really been feeding the fear here in my own community in Des Moines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Marlu, are you of Mexican heritage as well?
I am, yes. Mm-hmm. Both my parents were born in Mexico.
Mm-hmm. And what have you been hearing there with the fears, the concerns? What is the reaction there in Des Moines, in your community?
My community is afraid to gather and commune together, have fellowship together, because we've seen these negative sentiments expressed here in Des Moines. About a year ago, there was hateful graffiti on the south side near a mobile home district where there are a lot of Latinos that live. And the city, I believe, should be doing more to address those. But there's only so much that one individual can do. This definitely needs to be a cultural shift that starts with our leadership.
Okay. Marlu in Des Moines, thank you very much for your call. 1-866-780-9100. Just a reminder for those who may have just joined us, we're talking about Latinos in Iowa, the Latino community reacting to El Paso, that tragedy so fresh in our minds, the horror of it, now more than 2 weeks in the past. But of course, that and the Dayton shooting, we now have mass shootings more than once per day here in the United States. So in fact, that caller is absolutely right that we're talking about a couple of different issues here, the problem, the epidemic of mass shootings, and also here specifically concerning El Paso, to the targeting of one group of Americans here. Father Guillermo Trevino is with us. He lives in West Liberty. He's the parochial vicar there at St. Joseph's. Tell us about how you see your role at such a time, Father Trevino, when people come to you with, I imagine you can tell us, so what is the reaction? There's probably, as you said before, fear, anger. What advice do you have as the parochial vicar?
I think from my position, just presence, to be there. I admire a priest in El Paso who made the New York Times, and we got this email from our bishop, my boss, Bishop Thomas Sinkula, and he was sharing how this priest in El Paso went to 10 different funerals. He even missed the weekend services in his church. He told them that, I'm sorry, I have to be with the people. And so as a priest, he's a great witness for myself and what I should do to be there, to be present to the people, just let them, whatever's on their mind, let it out. And again, one's presence can do so much. One of my predecessors in St. West Liberty, Father Martin, he doesn't speak well Spanish, but he's always there for the people, and he's a great model. So that's what I'm trying to do, mm-hmm. is to be there.
Okay, let's go back to our phones. Plenty of people wanting to chip in with their thoughts. Adrian is with us from Columbus Junction. Adrian, welcome to the program.
Hi, welcome. Thank you. I just want to add that I have two boys. They're in their 20s, and I'm usually always leery about when they go out at night, and usually they tend to go to Iowa City at the Fed Mall, and really lately when the Ohio incident happened, that's when I, had to talk with them. So you guys got to be careful, be leery of where you're at, your mm-hmm. location with you, and so forth. And it's a sad state to be in, but I mean, I'd rather be safe than sorry,
Right. Yeah, we're forced to adapt to these unfortunate circumstances. Adrian, thank you so much from Columbus Junction. Let's go to Lena. Lena in Iowa City, coming up on a break. Lena, welcome to the program. I'll ask you to be concise. Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. So my name is Lena Maria Murillo. I'm a professor at the University of Iowa in the Departments of History and Gender Studies. And I just think that one of the things that's been missing from this conversation is to put it in historical context. For instance, we keep talking about the immigrant population because that's what the person who committed the horrible massacre in El Paso said. However, the people in El Paso of ethnic Mexican descent have been there for hundreds of years because Texas, in fact, used to belong to Mexico, right? So when we talk about immigration as a as another word for ethnic Mexican or Mexican-American, I think we need to be very thoughtful about how we structure this type of conversation, because what it does is it sets people of ethnic Mexican descent outside of American citizenship.
Right.
Like, so the people that were targeted in El Paso, are U.S. citizens, right? These are Americans. Right. So I think that that's an important thing to add to the conversation.
Right. And Lena, perhaps you missed my comment at the beginning. In the second half hour, we will dedicate it almost entirely to the history of Latinos in the United States and get to dig down on some of the points, exactly the points that you mentioned there. So thank you for bringing those up, Lena.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having this conversation. We need it.
Sure thing. A minute or so before we go to break, we can squeeze in Myra from Storm Lake. Myra, welcome to the program. I'll ask you to be brief as well.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to add that I'm from the same community as Emilia Marroquin. I have been living here for over 10 years. And I wanted to add that even though the shooting at El Paso occurred more than 900 miles from our home, we are feeling the effects of it just as strongly. Speaking for myself, I am much more aware of my surroundings, whether I'm at church, whether I'm at home, whether I'm at the store, it's still there, that fear. I do agree that this is an important conversation to have with our community, but I also feel that this should be a conversation happening with our political leaders and our state representative. And unfortunately, I don't think that those conversations are happening, at least not publicly.
Mm-hmm. What has changed for you in your community there, Myra, in your connections there? What are the discussions, very quickly before we go to break?
Some of the discussions are kind of what people have already said. It's those safety measures that we have to take when we're going out. It's that when we're out with our family, what do we need to do to stay safe? What protocols should we follow? Where should we meet? It's crazy to think that we need to have an emergency plan when we're doing things as simple as going shopping or going to church. But that's just the realism of it.
Okay. Thank you very much for that call. Myra from Storm Lake. We'll be back in just a moment as we continue our discussion. We'll talk with Omar Valerio Jimenez. He's an associate professor of history at the University of Texas at San Antonio, but also formerly of Iowa. He will provide that important link to the past, the Latino link to American heritage there. We hope you'll continue to join our conversation. And I think we're going to hold on to Father Trevino and Emilia Marroquin. Hopefully they'll stay with us. Join our conversation. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with six race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
Back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. Today we're looking back a little more than 2 weeks and observing also the ripples that are continuing on into the present of the two attacks on that weekend a couple of weeks ago. The one in El Paso, 22 people killed by a gunman at a local Walmart store. 13 hours later, a mass shooting at a busy night spot in Dayton, Ohio, leaving 9 dead. On that El Paso community, is a largely Hispanic community in El Paso on the border there. The attacker, according to police, said he specifically targeted Mexicans. We're specifically talking with Iowa's Latino community to see their reactions, how they have been coping. 1-866-780-9100. We had a flurry of calls in the last half hour. I want to get a reaction from our two guests before we move on to a historian who will give us really some depth as far as the Latino history here in America. Father Guillermo Trevino is with us, parochial vicar at St. Joseph's in West Liberty, also St. Bernadette's in West Branch and St. Patrick's in Iowa City. Emilia Marroquin is a member of the Storm Lake Community School District Board. Emilia, let me start out with you. We heard a number of callers there. Did something? Would you like to react to what you heard, or I mean, a lot of people with a lot of concerns.
Yes, and you know something that I agree with some of the callers, and I know this is not a conversation about political, but we have to think that what happened in El Paso is a direct result of the racist language, you know, that is used, especially by our government, and I think that is something that encourages, you know, or provokes more violence, and you know, something that shouldn't be happening. Mm-hmm. I think the president needs to, like, take the responsibility for what he harbors, because this is something that he created, you know, okay. In a way, it's like, to me, it's like he's giving the license to people to, like, disregard the humanity of others in general.
Right. Emilia, that is the debate that has been set off. What is the connection? Although the suspect in the El Paso shooting said he was not influenced by Trump, his writings do reflect the president's claims of, quote, an invasion on the U.S. Father Trevino, what's your...
Yeah, by invasion, yes. That's the word that the president used for our Central American people that is coming to the United States. And, you know, that word makes an impact. Yeah.
Right. Father Trevino, your thoughts on what, if any, connection you see there may be between the president's rhetoric and this tragedy?
I'm not sure there, but, you know, everybody can be Googled. Everybody, you know, you Google Father Guillermo Trevino, and you can see my columns, you can see my Facebook, and things like that. So I had to do a background check. I have to do one, like, every other year through my church, make sure, you know, even a credit check, and I think for employers and everything. So maybe the same thing for people to buy a gun. Maybe a Google search, check out their Facebook, you know, the FBI, they're very, our local government, I know nobody wants more work, but we can do a Google search and find out a lot and decide whether or not they should get a gun.
Mm-hmm. Also joining our conversation this hour, Omar Valerio Jimenez is an associate professor of history at the University of Texas at San Antonio. Used to live in Iowa, lived and worked in Iowa from 2006 to 2015, taught at the University of Iowa in the UI's Department of History. Omar, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you for having me.
We are looking for, been looking for your deep dive into our Latino history, our rich Latino history here in the U.S., but also in Iowa. First of all, before you give us a short sort of brief on the history, give us your overall reaction to El Paso and the aftermath. And you've been listening to the first part of this program as well, haven't you?
Yes, I have. And, well, I will say that it's a tragic event. And as someone who is of Mexican background myself, I feel very sad and, you know, about what happened. I'm very angry as well at the politicians who are promoting this anti-immigrant rhetoric, white supremacist rhetoric. But I also feel encouraged because I think that there's more conversations happening in the media, in universities, in workplaces about this anti-Mexican rhetoric, the anti-immigrant rhetoric, and what we could do about it. I also say that I think it's fair to call what happened there white supremacist violence, domestic terrorism, and from the first half of the show, listening to it, you can hear in the voices of community members in Iowa that it has accomplished at least one of its goals, which is to terrorize and strike fear in the community, in the Latino community.
Mm-hmm. This word invasion has been a key word in the debate over the past 2 weeks. It was used in the manifesto written by the alleged shooter. Also used many times by President Trump in past rhetoric. Tell us about the history of Latinos in Iowa. We cannot characterize that as an invasion, can we?
You're asking about Latinos in Iowa or in Texas?
Latinos in the United States. So let you give us the big picture. How did Latinos come to Iowa?
Okay. Well, let me start with the United States. I mean, the United States came to Latinos. Latinos, specifically Mexicans, were living in what today is the U.S. Southwest long before the U.S. became a nation. El Paso was founded before the U.S. became a nation, the city of El Paso. So when this rhetoric is used about, you know, Mexicans or Latinos being immigrants, it's often used to mark them as foreigners. When Latinos and specifically Mexicans have not been foreigners all the time. There are some who are immigrants, obviously, and we still continue to have immigration from Mexico and other Latin American countries. But Latinos are both native-born and have long-standing ties in the U.S., in the U.S. Southwest and in northern Mexico, and as well as immigrants. And so there's this popular saying among Latino activists, you know, we didn't cross the border crossed us. That is specifically referring to the U.S.-Mexican War that occurred in the mid-19th century when over half of Mexico was taken in a war of conquest by the United States. So, you know, Latinos, Mexicans have been in the in what today is the U.S., in Texas, in New Mexico, California, and Arizona, Colorado, before European Americans or Anglo-Americans ever set foot on that land. And obviously, American Indians have been here longer. But Mexicans, some of us claim to be partly American Indian.
Right, and there's a lot of nuanced history here to get in a very few minutes. But jump to the point in our history when Latinos settled Iowa. Why and when?
Okay, sure. So in the late 19th century, Latinos started migrating to Iowa for work, and sometimes part of the reason they were migrating sort of echoes why Latinos are migrating to Iowa, continue to migrate to Iowa and other Midwestern communities today, which is they wanted they were seeking safety. And one of the things that happened during, for instance, the late 19th century and the early 20th century, as Mexicans were leaving Mexico, partly because of what was going on in the late 19th century under the dictatorship of Diaz, and there was land consolidation, increasing mechanization, people being forced off their land. Diaz also developed the railroads, and the railroads basically linked the U.S. to Mexico send raw materials out, but it also and import manufactured items. But it also allowed immigrants to leave the nation, and they often came to Texas. During the early 20th century, Texas became known as a very sort of anti-labor, very racist state. And so, among some immigrants that have been interviewed by historians like Zaragoza Vargas. They mentioned that they went to places like Detroit, like to Chicago, places like Iowa, because they were trying to escape the discrimination, the anti-labor policies that they experienced in Texas.
And how were they welcomed in Iowa, generally speaking? Was it how much different was it than the conditions they experienced in Texas?
Well, it was much different because they were welcomed in the sense of there wasn't as much anti-Mexican attitudes. Although in some cases, you know, there were still discrimination. So Iowa wasn't free of discrimination, but it was definitely less than in Texas. And initially, they came to work in agriculture, also in railroads. And they settled once they established families, just like, you know, immigrants everywhere. So they started settling. In Iowa, in places like Illinois, Michigan, because they established families and they had children, and they wanted to make sure that they provided a safe and secure and stable environment. Mm-hmm. But in places like Iowa, you know, there was things like Mexican rooms established in schools. So while Mexicans weren't segregated into separate schools like they were in parts of Texas and in other parts of the Southwest. In Iowa, there were certain schools that had a particular room that they designated as a Mexican room, and this has been studied by various people, including some doctoral students at the University of Iowa.
And this was passed for the reason of language? Because when you're referring to the late 19th century, early 20th century, there are a lot of immigrants from European countries who have as their first language, I don't know, German, Danish, all these kinds of languages filtering into Iowa as well, aren't they?
Sure. And in the case of the Mexican, the so-called Mexican rooms that were established, the official reason was that they were doing it sort of for pedagogical reasons, because some of the children didn't have a command of English as well as others. But in reality, it was because of their racial and ethnic background. But it's the same kind of excuse that was used in Texas and California and so forth to enforce segregated schools and rooms.
Okay. Omar Valerio Jimenez is at the University of Texas at San Antonio, a historian there in their department, also formerly of Iowa. Let's go back to our phones. Gene is with us. I believe, Gene, I see on my screen you're calling from Iowa City, but you're originally from El Paso.
Yeah, I'm originally from El Paso. Oh, well, I'm from San Antonio originally. I went to school at the University of Northern Iowa. In 2009. And then after that, I came to the University of Texas at El Paso to work on my PhD in history. So it's a different trajectory. But I'm really interested in this conversation. Coming from Iowa and then hearing this conversation over there happening after what happened here in El Paso is very unique. I only live 5 minutes away from where the events actually took place. My wife was in the mall when it happened, so she got escorted out by the police without knowing what was happening. And then my mother-in-law was just in the Walmart an hour before. So it hits very close to home. And then on top of that, we only live two blocks away from the hospital where they took the first victims of the incident. Mm-hmm. So after all that, it's very shocking to see how it hits so close to home when you see this on the news all across the United States. But it definitely hit really, really close here in El Paso.
Yeah, Gene, El Paso, a well-known Hispanic community, do you think this mass shooting marks a turning point in how your community sees itself in the U.S.? We're certainly hearing during this hour how community members here in Iowa, and I have to assume across the U.S., are taking greater precautions.
Absolutely. I think El Paso is a very resilient city. Anybody that's ever visited El Paso can see how proud the heritage is here, how proud the people that live here, and how welcoming they are. But on top of that, it's such a traumatic event that it actually has taken a toll on what the conversation has been leading to, either gun control or talking about, anti-immigration rhetoric and how to combat that as well, which has been a part of the community's, I mean, for a long time, even before this happened. So that being said, I mean, we still have a president like Donald Trump, right, that has visited El Paso. Some people here say he made it a target for El Paso, which if you see everything that's happened, I mean, it just so happens that this guy drove 9 hours just to hit a place like El Paso and to hit a very soft spot, soft target like Walmart, of all places. And it's unfathomable how that happened.
Gene, from Texas, I'll just say you're from many places. I think you're calling from Iowa City today. Thank you very much, Gene.
Oh, thank you.
Back for some more history in the limited time that we have, Omar. I wanted to have you explain a little bit about the treaty. Of course, the United States coming into being, Mexico coming into being, and that border area highly disputed, fought over. Talk about the treaty that made states like Texas, California, New Mexico part of the U.S. and how the Latino community, Mexicans living in those territories, were viewed as U.S. citizens.
Sure. So the war between the U.S. and Mexico ended in 1848, and a treaty was signed on February 2nd of 1848 called the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo. And in this treaty, Mexicans who were living in the annexed territories from Texas through California and New Mexico and Arizona were basically given U.S. citizenship, or given the choice. They could choose to remain Mexican citizens, or if they didn't, or they could become U.S. citizens immediately, or if they didn't do anything, they didn't make a choice. I mean, a year after the treaty was signed, they were automatically became U.S. citizens. And when they became U.S. citizens in 1848 or 1849, whenever, in the mid-19th century, they were basically legally seen as white because only white people could become U.S. citizens, could become naturalized U.S. citizens, according to the 1790 Naturalization Act. And obviously, after the passage of the 14th Amendment, then Mexican immigrant children born in the U.S. or children born of Mexican immigrants could also become U.S. citizens because they were born within the territory of the U.S. But the treaty has had a very long history in Mexican civil rights reforms because that's what provides citizenship. It guarantees that Mexicans are. would receive property rights, and their rights would be respected, voting rights and so forth, freedom of assembly, freedom of religion. And so over several generations, Mexican Americans activists have referred to that treaty and said, you know, the U.S. government, the state governments are not enforcing that treaty.
Mm-hmm. As we wind up this conversation with about 5 minutes left, let me turn to you. Thank you for the history of our proud Latino heritage here in the United States, Omar. But tell us, give a historian's view forward, what you see now, where we are now 2 weeks after this mass shooting where the shooter allegedly said he was targeting Mexicans, according to the police there. Are we at a turning point, do you think?
I think we are. I think a lot of the media is realizing what Mexicans and other immigrants and immigrants in general and Latinos in general have realized for quite some time, which is that Trump's rhetoric is inciting violence, is encouraging these white supremacists. And I'm also encouraged that as we're having this conversation, we're also having conversations about Latino history. And I want to put a plug in for the Latino Studies program at the University of Iowa, which I helped start, and which Lena Murillo, who was on the program earlier, is part of. I believe that programs like that are very important because they help educate the population, the student population at the universities. In Texas, there has been a law passed that allows Mexican American studies to be taught in the public schools, in high schools, and I think that's very important because the shooter, as well as Trump and many of his allies, are woefully ignorant of Latino history because Latinos are not immigrants in mass. Many of them have been here longer than the U.S., or their families have been here longer than the U.S. has been a country. We've served in just about every war, in the U.S. Army. But also his rhetoric, you know, Trump's rhetoric is also not new. Anti-immigrant, anti-Mexican rhetoric has been around since, you know, the early 19th century when the Texas Republic was founded. And the criminalization of Latinos has also been around since then. And in fact, one of the things that I study is a rebellion that happened in 1859, the Cortina Rebellion. And one of the reasons that Juan Cortina led a revolt in Brownsville, Texas, is because of property loss, but also because of the criminalization of Mexicans.
Mm-hmm. Okay, before we go, let's check in with our other guest, Father Trevino, of West Liberty, West Branch, and Iowa City, looking after the Catholic community there. What do you want to say on the way out? What will you be focusing on in the coming weeks, especially with this tragedy 2 weeks behind us?
Just, my parents came from Mexico, and so I'm a first-generation immigrant myself, and, you know, I like to think I became a priest. We're here to work. We're here to make the United States a great nation. And so I want to share that with the viewers that, you know, all these people that are coming, they want to make the United States the best country. That's why they're here to work. They're here to do what's best for all of society.
Mm-hmm. Emilio Marroquin, are you still there from Storm Lake?
Yes, I still here.
Yes. Do you have any short words to leave us with, thoughts?
Well, yeah, what I can say, I might not be a Mexican, but I have a lot of respect for Mexicans. I live between them. I work with them. So I think we all Latinos must come together after this shooting. You know, we have to protect each other. And also we have to push the political and societal change together because we are a big mass, and we can make the difference.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much. And Omar, this has been very instructive to have you go back in history. Why do you think it is that very quickly, demonstrating that Latinos have been part of our culture going back to the middle 1800s here in Iowa, why are they being singled out here as portrayed as outsiders?
Because, I mean, you know, Trump and his allies know that kind of rhetoric incites their base. You know, it's the same, the kind of rhetoric that, you know, about building the wall. We know that, you know, scholars know that walls don't work. And, you know, people like even, you know, the late John McCain knew that walls don't work. Okay. And yet they pushed it because they knew that they could get votes.
Okay, oh, so we have to go. Thank you very much for being with us. Omar Valerio Jimenez, Associate Professor of History at the University of Texas at San Antonio, formerly of the University of Iowa, Father Trevino, and Emilia Marroquin, thank you very much for joining us this hour. And all of the listeners who joined in, thank you for all of those calls. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.